was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their backs confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string and makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. Tonight, folks, as long as we can connect, we're having a little bit of trouble connecting with our guest, but who I'm going to be speaking tonight is a documentary filmmaker, a crazy person with the camera, an Orthodox Christian who has ensconced himself in the Assyrian Christian Iraqi village, Havresk. The documentary is Stand on Courage, and it's on the struggles of the Armenian and Assyrian Christian Iraqis in the village they've formed on the edge of an ISIS-controlled territory. Standing in the face of adversity, bigotry, hatred, oppression, they have protected themselves from the Islamic State and created a community that is home to all Christians facing this persecution. First, I want to start off with a bit of information, background on what is going on there. Can you roll clip one, Mike? Yes.
We move now to Holly Williams in northern Iraq, where a power vacuum left by government forces is being filled by local militias.
On the road to Mosul, this is the last checkpoint before territory that's now controlled by Islamic militants. Just 10 miles away is the center of Iraq's second largest city, which was overrun by armed extremists last week. The militants announced they'll impose strict Islamic law.
The men here are telling us that the Islamic militants are just another 50 yards in that direction.
Just outside the militants' control and vulnerable to attack is the Christian town of Bartella. The locals told us Christians have been living here for nearly 2,000 years and they still pray in Aramaic, the language spoken by Jesus. They're defended by 600 Christian militiamen. The Iraqi government soldiers who were supposed to be protecting this area ran away from the Islamic extremists. Captain Firaz Jacob is in charge of the militiamen and told us everyone here is frightened.
If the militants come here to this Christian town, what will they do?
I don't know, he said, but maybe they'll do what they've done in other places and kill us.
As the Islamic extremists attempt to push south towards Baghdad, these photos of what look like a mass execution have propaganda value because they tell Iraqi government soldiers what to expect if they stand in the way of the militants. Holly Williams, CBS News, Kalak, Iraq.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. David Ritter is going to be with us in just a moment. What I would like to share with you now is the trailer for the upcoming documentary film. Mike, can you roll clip two, please?
The brave person born once and die once. Let die like a lion.
A Christian village takes a stand.
We are a very, very brave people. Let live like a lion and die like a lion.
Our people faced the same exact problem exactly 100 years ago.
Armenian and Syrian people
is
fighting for their heritage.
Pure evil against good. And it's not more complicated than that.
Taking a stand against genocide. When ISIS attacked our home, I told my children not to fear. Jesus is with us. He will protect us. She said,
"We don't give up. The Lord has His special plan, but His plan don't work without brave people."
That was the mayor of Havresk, and welcome to the show, David Ritter.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my honor, sir. My heart goes out to those kids, and you know, it's not lost on me the fact that we have entire towns that are overrun with Islamic immigration from all of these places. Yet, as I understand, it's a very difficult ordeal to try and get these Christians visas to come to the United States to protect their lives. So why don't you tell me about what you've experienced over there, what you've seen?
Well, you know, while being in Iraq, and I was also in the UAE for a bit, but primarily Iraq, I can say that I've seen some of the most generous, loving, giving people in my life within these Christian communities. When I was with the Armenian people and the Assyrian people, I had seen the most amazing dispositions and the most horrific times and turbulent times that I think anyone could ever experience, with the looming threat of rape and murder and destruction. These were some of the most giving people who, many have been keeping their spirits up to the best of the ability they can. I've seen people emotionally crushed, but many just doing the best they can get, you know, to get on with their lives. And it really makes you take a look back at any problems that we have and kind of trivializes it, I think. And makes you, it brings more gratitude for me in my life for the things I do have, and make me want to protect the security and the things I have much more. And I think the only moral and right thing to do is for us to give all we can to help these people make a better life for themselves. And you know, regardless of your identity, I think if you're a Christian, you should definitely have a vested interest in the betterment of these people and their heritage and their identity. But I think if you're a human being, if you have any sense of humanity, that you should also care for the betterment of these people. So for me, it was an amazing experience. And I rarely cry at this point in my life as a grown man. I mean, but I can say that flying away from Iraq, I had tears streaming down my eyes thinking about all the people I was leaving and the things I'd witnessed and the love I've seen from them. A stronger family unit than I've ever seen in my life, more love than I've seen given to me and amongst each other than I've ever seen in my life. And they definitely are living Christian virtues and ideas as we should be living them, I think, generally speaking.
Yeah. From what I understand, worship services are still, they still use Aramaic, which is the language of Jesus Christ in many of their worship services.
Amongst the Assyrians specifically, yeah, the Assyrian people speak basically their language, their ethnic language is derived of Aramaic. and in their services, and many of Orthodox churches still utilize Aramaic. Others, you know, depending on the denomination, and you know, might use Armenian or Latin or various things in like mass. But yeah, definitely amongst the Assyrians, it's amazing, and this just shows us that these are amazing cultural groups with history and roots and heritage dating back to ancient times and carrying on traditions that could be lost if, you know, they're not protected.
Well, it's kind of ironic that the Obama administration is paved a pathway of multiculturalism, which is the progressive way. But the multiculturalism only, of course, if you don't happen to be Christian, it would seem.
It's interesting. I've heard that the amount of Christians who've come amongst these migrations, they call it the Syrian Syrian refugees, though I think we all know that rarely are there people coming from Syria. There, in some cases, less than 1%, and other cases, they're just very minuscule numbers, and these are some of the Christian people are primary targets of the Islamic State and this kind of militant violence. And it makes sense that they would be, one of the largest migrations.
Yes, that's what it would make sense to me. I don't understand, well, then again, I haven't understood what Obama and how he functions and thinks anyway. I do have another clip that I want to share. Mike, if you could ready clip 3. It's a Newsmax clip that speaks specifically of that plight that's going on. Let me know when you have it ready, Mike. As I tell you, you would, of course, you're right in saying that the Christians should be the first protected from the Islamic militants, ISIS, ISIL, whatever it is that we funded. But then again, tomorrow night I'm going to have I'm going to share on the show a little bit of the variety of Barbara Spector, who you may or may not be familiar with.
I'm very aware of who she is.
Okay, well, pushing multiculturalism in Europe, while is seemingly trying to destroy the Western world and Christianity and the identity of many of these very old cultures that have maintained their identity for hundreds and hundreds of years. And it blows my mind that individuals like she openly and outwardly stated, oh my Lord, which I just released the video again today, and I'm sure everyone on this network has heard it, when she says that Europe is entering a multicultural phase and that Jews will be resented for taking their leading role in the leadership of doing this, and if not, Europe will not survive if they don't take that leading role. So she feels that anti-Semitism will probably be an issue because of her and other Jews taking that leading role. And the thing that bothers me here is that I see Israel, which, of course, they have Aliyah, which you can return if you're a Jew, not a Christian. Christians don't have the right to return, even though they're a direct derivative to Israel. Israel wants to maintain its national and ethnic or racial identity, as they so call it. Yet we have these Christians that are in absolute, the direct crosshairs of these militants, and seemingly they're being used as cannon fodder, which only supports my position that people like Barbara Spector, of course not maintaining the majority of all people out there, but people like Barbara Spector have no problem with the destruction of ancient Christian cultures. It blows my mind. Mike, do you have that clip 3 ready? I don't know what happened to clip 3, but I would really very much like to roll that as soon as you have an opportunity. it speaks of I don't know if you know the Archbishop in that area, but he has commented as to the lack of willingness by the Obama administration in doing and acting on this. Is there anything that you what have you seen there on the ground? Are these folks they're essentially hanging on to their dear lives?
Yeah, I've seen, you know, things are very difficult from, you know, 2012 onward, and they're still difficult. There's still violence. There's still, you know, horrific threats happening. But I found a lot of people to be really trying to focus now on to build stability, get back to living their lives in their communities, rebuilding their homes, churches, really wanting to have business and commerce. The long-term goal is stability. You know, a lot of these people don't want to be these quote-unquote Syrian refugees. They want to stay where they are. They want to help their country. A lot of these people are patriots. There's a lot of Iraqi patriots and Kurdish patriots I'm meeting who want to maintain their homelands, their identity, their town. Some of these towns and villages are thousands of, or over 1,000 years old, or at least hundreds of years old. In the case of the village we are filming, Havresk, this is an ethnic Armenian village, has Armenian roots. However, currently a lot of Assyrian people are also living there and found refuge in the village. And so this is a newer village. It was only built in the 1920s, but still an amazing history and heritage. And it was a result of people fleeing the Ottoman Turkish Empire during the genocide of 1915 against the Armenians. They were fleeing the Ottoman-controlled territories and made their way to Iraq, and they were granted citizenships, and these people became Iraqi citizens and formed this village in the 1920s, Havresk, which, it was built on, on the premise of this kind of situation, of violence and attack against their religious identity and their ethnic identity. And it's happening again. You know, we're seeing it. They just rebuilt the village in 2006. It was destroyed in the 70s under the Saddam regime.
Yeah.
And now they've rebuilt it in 2006, and now fearful again it might get destroyed. So this is a very frustrating situation. And I think rather than keep creating these quote-unquote refugee crises or these refugee situations, why not help these people take a stand and maintain their homelands rather than having to continuously flee and become refugees?
Well, let me ask you a question about, I don't know whether you're that familiar with the regime of Saddam Hussein, but how did Saddam treat these people?
This is a very interesting thing, because I spent a lot of time with Armenian Iraqi people in the States, older generations, and in Iraq, and most everyone I meet has a great respect for him. They respected him. A lot of them liked him. They talk about him with a very warm remembrance. But most people agree that he made many mistakes and there was wrongdoing on his part. Things went too far. And, sure. So it was mixed in that sense. Some people felt, you know, there was mixed feelings, I guess is the best way I could say, when I talked to Armenian Iraqis and Assyrians for that matter. But there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein did maintain a secular society that protected many ethnic minorities and Christian minorities and Armenians. Armenians did not have that much difficulty, but nonetheless, there were, like I said, there was injustice. It wasn't perfect. Definitely, there were things that were horrible, like entire villages being destroyed in what is now Kurdistan, and the Armenian villages, you know, pushing ethnic communities out of their townships in a want to assimilate them into the greater society of Iraq. And it was done, you know, in some very, less than kind circumstances, I guess, one way to put it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find it interesting. I think one of the reasons why I'm curious about Saddam is for the obvious reason. Now, we all know that Saddam was, he was an ally of the United States and kind of cooperated with the Central Intelligence Agency for a very long time, and it seemed very peculiar for 9/11 to occur and the first thing that was done was Iraq was attacked for something that Iraq didn't have anything to do with. And in fact, I think that much of the stability or the instability that was created has very little to do with Republicans or progressives, but in fact globalists who on both sides of the aisle had their own purposes, their own agendas. And oftentimes we hear as an excuse for delving into these conflicts how they want to save people and free them and all of this nonsense. And then we see, of course, the complete destabilization of the entire region based on a pack of lies. And again, we have individuals like these Christians in this village that are left essentially to their own devices to try and protect themselves. You know, I have to say that if I were not in the situation that I was in right now, where you know, I'm kind of very much involved in something right now, I really, you know, if I get things straightened out here, I would be perfectly willing to go and stand with these people myself.
You're not the only person, and you know, while in Iraq, and it seems to be rare, but you do meet Western people, Americans, and sometimes British, and you know, people from all over the world who feel the same way I have, and the way you do right now, and it's just overwhelming grief, anger. You know, this frustration of seeing all of this violence, knowing that little girls and children and women are being raped and abused systematically. And it gets so frustrating when you turn on the news and the only thing they can talk about are wedding cakes not being baked for some demographic, and that's all they can obsess about. Or all they can talk about is, you know, X, Y, and Z, and bathrooms for another demographic, you know, something about bathrooms. All we hear about wedding cakes and bathrooms, and that's obsessed about in mainstream media. But when we hear about children being tortured, people being murdered, people losing their homes, being forced into very difficult situations on a massive level, it's, I don't want to say a blackout, but it's kind of crickets, isn't it? Isn't it interesting? And this drove me insane. Just, you know, since 2011, 2012, when this violence started really kicking in, I was so frustrated, and I just leaped at the opportunity. Once my life, I had my affairs settled, I made my way, and this is what I've been dedicated to for over a year now. And it's just out of, you know, this is what frustrates me, is that the Islamic State has massive amounts of recruits every single day from all different nation states, all different countries, and look how dedicated these people are, these young men, willing to die, willing to give all their time, money, and everything. And what's going on? We have all these Christian people in the West, and where are the young men stepping up to do something? You know, and that frustrates me. But I did meet people, Americans and people out there on the ground doing all they could to donate and give and, you know, stand with them right in the front lines. And I was there with them, and I was happy to see it. And a lot of them veterans, U.S. veterans as well. So there's definitely the American people, I think, have a conscience, at least a very large demographic of them, right? So.
Well, we you know, genocide is nothing new to the Armenian people. My God, you know, what they've been through in history is just, it's incredible that these people, they're a tenacious group of people. And we hear about other folks and, you know, things from World War II, and we don't hear about many of the Christians that were killed during World War II. I mean, millions upon millions. I believe the number is somewhere around 40 million.
Not to digress too much, but, you know, it's interesting how little we hear about how, you know, Stalin murdered tens of millions, well over 10 million Christian people. And that's completely, like, again, we don't talk about that. As Marxism and Marxist ideology is, you know, unabashedly promoted in so much of our academia and so much of society now, and, you know, it's not very...
Yes.
I could walk in with a T-shirt of Joseph Stalin, and I probably could get away with it. but wear a swastika related of Hitler. You know, it comes down, there's a lot of media agenda that we're battling, and you know, the people who deceive us the most are the ones who claim to be the most egalitarian. The people who promote equality the most tend to be so uninterested in equality. The people who promote multiculturalism the most tend to be the most uninterested with it. I really want the Assyrian, Armenian, Yazidi peoples, all these different ethnic groups in the Middle East to survive, because, you know, this is multiculturalism. These people have had a place in these regions for thousands of years. You know, Armenians, maybe not, you could argue not so long, but definitely Assyrians and Yazidis and so forth. And
yes,
where is these ultra-liberal, quote-unquote, media heads and the Bill Maher's and all these individuals, where is their voice? You know, it seems to be very weak and even sometimes mute.
Well, it is mute, and it's because it doesn't happen. Look, you know, I don't hide the way that I feel for, you know, these certain elites like Spectre and company. We have a, even if you take this back to the days of World War II, you had the top Zionists, the elite, who were involved with the transfer agreement. They were the first ones out, and there was a big to-do. I mean, there was cooperation between the National Socialists, and now if you look at Israel today, I wonder who got the ideology from who, because I'm not seeing much of a difference. Many people call Israel the only democracy in the Middle East, which is a farce anyway. They just recently suspended the elections for the replacement of the Likud prime minister, and of course that's not very democratic. But aside from that, the very foundation of them, they're a nationalized people that are run by. Now, I have, my stepbrother was Jewish. I love him with all my heart. I'm Christian. I have no contempt for anyone. I have problems with certain ideologies. And the ideology that seems to be winning the day all over that area is for an agenda that we sometimes hear is referred to the Greater Israel Project or whatever it is. But if you really look to this ideology, at its core, these neoconservatives, it is essentially for the complete and utter destabilization of all of these countries that surround Israel, because if any one of these countries remains strong, of course, to certain people in Tel Aviv, that's a very bad thing. Well, when you have strong regimes like even under Saddam, you didn't have terrorism. Gaddafi, you didn't have terrorism rampant. You didn't have ISIS traveling the countryside. So these are things that make us think very long and hard. We have to go to a break. We will be back with David Ritter on Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritional meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Mother of the moon, which built my sails, close the sea of years. With no provision, but no basis, close the straits of fear.
Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm on the line with David Ritter, a documentarian, a crazy man with the camera, who very bravely went to Havrisk and fortunately for all of us recorded what he saw. And we were talking a bit. I was going to run a clip in that first break. I'm going to run it in just a minute. And it speaks to, it was from Newsmax, and it speaks to some of the frustration that I have with the Obama administration and their position on some of this immigration. Can you roll that clip?
These are real martyrs, if you look at it. I mean, these are people who are not unlike what you read in the what the Roman Empire did to the first Christians in the first and earliest centuries and decades. It's the identical story. Christians under the Islamic State and under other Islamic organizations and mobs and regimes are oftentimes even being told convert or die, and they are being killed.
Raymond Ibrahim on this program last Thursday detailing the grim choice confronting Christians in the Middle East, convert to Islam or die for their faith. with Miranda Khan. J.D. Hayworth back with you now on Newsmax Prime.
J.D., that continued persecution has been met by relative silence in many international capitals, including our very own, and that leaves many asking, what will it take to awaken Washington and the Obama administration to this threat?
We're joined now by someone who can give voice to what's at stake because he's experienced firsthand this persecution. He's the Archbishop of Erbil, Iraq, Archbishop Bashar Warda. Archbishop, we thank you for your time here on Newsmax Prime. And, sir, as I understand thank it, you. You've been asking a basic question. Why are your people denied American visas? So let me ask you, why do you think that is?
I don't know, because I'm not aware of the what you called all the legislations that's behind granting a visa. But one thing I know, that throughout the history, that the Americans have said and proven that they are with the victims, with the persecuted people, because of their choices, because of their faith. But this time, I don't see that much of work has been done on that issue. Yes, there are several visits from congressmen, from politicians, from so many church leaders. Lots of volunteers are really working with the refugees, which is great, but we need more of actions to be done for the Christians and Yazidis, for those who've been persecuted because of their faith.
Archbishop, to put it in perspective, can you give us an idea of just how big of a crisis it is that you and the Christian community are facing right now in Iraq?
It's like this. We have a history of 2,000 years. If we do not act immediately and decisively, this history will be taught only in textbooks. Definitely not in Iraq, because this history have not been taught at all there in the curriculum, probably in some of the museums and in other colleges, to say that there was Christianity active in this country. So if we do not act, this history will gone. Because imagine in 2003, we have some 1,200,000 Christians. Today, we are speaking about less than 300,000 Christians, and everyone is asking, is there a future left in this country? And when you speak about the Yazidis, you are also speaking about another community. So if you are speaking about two indigenous communities of Iraq, giving the name Christians, two indigenous people of Iraq is being under threat now. Now, if you don't stand for the Christian faith, at least stand for the victims of Yazidis and Christians together.
And Archbishop, with that in mind, Yazidis, Christians, persecuted indigenous peoples. We know the stark choice we heard earlier was convert to Islam or die. In terms of what awaits those communities in their future, is it flee or fight? Or is there a third course of action that you would suggest?
Third course of action would be stopping Daesh, ISIS, from advancing, which the Americans and coalition have did with the help of the Peshmerga, the Kurdistan fighters, and with the Iraqi army, at least stopping Daesh from advancing, then helping the community to sustain themselves, to be around the area, like in Kurdistan, where they live safely, to help them, sustain them. But most important, to work for naming what's happening in Iraq over the last 12 months as a genocide. Once you name it rightly and justly, and you don't have to worry about the evidence, it's there. Once you name it, work for it, and as congressman, as the whole states, go for that resolution. It's a genocide happening there, and we have to act. Then you are giving just you are doing justice to the people, to the victims, and also acknowledging.
Archbishop, we will have to leave it there, but your description of genocide rings in our ears, and we thank you for your comments. You heard what the Archbishop had to say. What are your comments? Reach out to us.
Thank you very much, Mike. David, you've heard that clip. I don't know if you're familiar with the Archbishop, but obviously this is, and quite perplexingly to me, a situation that has been going on and going on and going on, and with all of the U.S. involvement, with all of the shock and awe and the everything else that's going on in the Middle East. And I was saying before we went to that clip, you take somebody like Gaddafi, okay? Gaddafi, for most of us, we can't understand him. The man was flamboyant. He was eccentric. He was a lot of things. But we hear rhetoric from U.S. politicians calling him an evil man and that he tortured his own people. And the hypocrisy, it seems to me, from the United States government, to sit here and say, to actually make an argument like they did with Assad wanting to go into Syria, saying, well, he did a chemical weapons attack against his own people, while we literally have evidence that Christians are being annihilated, and they could give a damn. I just don't understand it.
Quick on the draw to create a war with Assad and take down the Syrian government, but very, 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 very slow to respond to anything to aid the Yazidi Christian and the Christian minorities, the Assyrian, the Armenian, etc. You know, isn't that interesting? And right off the bat, 2012, and people's memories become so short with this media overload and the bombardment we have from mass media, that it was only in 2012 or so that our government, the U.S. government, or I should say the Obama administration, was ready to go to war with Syria. And why take all of this effort, all of this finance and all of this manpower, and why direct it towards Assad when you could be directing this at the Islamic State? And it took so long for any response. That's very angering. There is response now, in fairness. I think too little too late, but yet, nonetheless, there is action now, and we do see a light at the end of the tunnel. There does seem to be some end to this mayhem, fortunately. But it still isn't frustrating that, you know, and there's things that are evident right now. They're very pernicious, horrible things that have been done that, I'm even apprehensive just to go on and talk about, because I don't want to digress, and ultimately this gets to be a very difficult subject matter, right?
Yes.
But all I can say is that, the American people should be focused on doing what they can and not looking to the state, to the government, to do everything for them. If you are a Christian, why not have the same tenacity and the same courage and the same focus that that Daesh has? Why allow the Islamic State, ISIS, to be able to have all of this fever and all of this tenacity? Why aren't young Christian men being as tenacious, and why aren't we as a church doing all we can? Why aren't just as, even if you're an atheist or an agnostic, why not as a human being doing what you can to help these people survive? Why not take into our own hands and find out what we can do as individuals or as communities, right?
Well, of course, it really shouldn't matter, really, in the scheme of things, to anyone who is a human being. It should not matter whether these are Christians or whoever they are. But of course, I see, being a historian, I see a pattern. I'm about establishing patterns, and it seems to me that when it comes down to it, the real persecuted folks out there are the Christians. Now, not just there, and I don't want to make light when I say persecution. Here in this country, we see the liberal progressive
you know, they attack anything Christianity. They attack, they go for the unborn. They break down the traditional family. They're destroying marriage as we know it. They're separating families, and this push of collectivism and all of this. So when I look to the Middle East and who we are helping, who we aren't helping, who we're funding, some of the animals that the U.S. government was funding were the type of folks that would cut the heart out of their adversaries and eat it. I mean, this is who we were funding. This is the insanity. All the while, this mayor of that town there, of Havresk, seems to me to be not only a man of principle and of a has a strong moral compass, but this man has courage like a lion. This guy, I mean, he impresses me. I look to him, and I can't help but admire his tenacity. What do you know about that man? Did you get to spend any time with him there?
Marat Wasanyan is an amazing man, Marat. I lived in that village. That's where I spent actually the vast majority of my time in Iraq. And he, I spent the actually majority of a lot of my time in his home, at his table, breaking bread with him and his family. And I can say that this man is, how to describe him is just so difficult, because he's just this, as an individual, even as a person, outside the perimeters of being a mayor, a leader, a general, as it is now, a leader of his own military and militia of his men, and he is a soldier. I mean, that's been his life career. Actually, he was in the special forces of the Iraqi military as a sniper. This man is a heavily decorated soldier with a long history, and you know, it's only now in his life and recently. I mean, he's always been a Christian, as he was born into Christianity, but now it's become something very, you know, really tangible to him. It's something in his life that he feels he has a calling or something. Like, you know, he reminds me of almost like Paul, you know, on the road to Damascus. You know, this man just had this realization, and he had to, you know, do something for his people, his heritage. Now, he was born in that village of Havresk before it was destroyed. And, you know, he and other elders of the village had the vision of, why don't we recreate our childhood home? And they've done it. And just with a small number of people, they went through hell. I mean, they froze in the winter. They baked in the summer with no electricity, nothing, no water, no help. Oh, they did, you know, and I have to say there have been some wonderful people reaching out and have helped them from the Kurdish community and various communities, even Germany. Some Germans came to help build their church, design a beautiful church for them. So there has been help, and that's the key. These people are independent. They're not beggars. They're not putting their hands out and saying, please, please give me. They're saying, you know, we're desperate. Things have come to dire straits, and we need, you know, people just to help us become independent again. We don't want to be in a welfare system. We need to lift ourselves up again so we can, you know, be sustainable. And this man is amazing. He is literally running himself down, doing all he can for this community. And I won't give out too much right now, because there's a lot of things going on, but he is in the front lines fighting the Islamic State, and he has formed a small militia with the young men of that, even older men of that village, the young men primarily, of 22 men, just 22 men.
God,
and they have defected every ISIS attack, every attack that the Islamic State has thrust upon them. They have deflected with no more than 22 men. And that is the story of David and Goliath, as far as I'm concerned. The 21st century,
sir.
David and Goliath, right here.
Well, we do have a caller on the line, Ed in Utah. Ed, you're on.
Tim?
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you very much. Good show tonight. I want to bring something to the table here. Excuse me, concerning Hillary Clinton and what her role seems to have been there with Benghazi. And I turn your attention to Richard Walker, a very good writer there at the American Free Press newspaper. On June 16th, his amazing, groundbreaking column concerning Benghazi and the fact that why so many neocons like James Woolsey, CIA director formerly, is in her camp, and why the Romney people are in their camp. He seems to have nailed it, and it's getting short shrift even on alternative media. I would really like you to look at this fact: the Golan Heights, where you do have foreign troops there, the United Nations observer troops are stationed there. That is one of the only areas in Syria where they do have natural gas and oil. Israel and this greater Israel has always wanted their own natural gas and resources. Well, it turns out, lurking in the background is James Woolsey, Dick Cheney, and Rupert Murdoch, all executive advisors to the Genie Energy Company out of New Jersey, which are poised.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, G-E-N-I-E. Please look this up. The Genie Energy Company with Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch. This would explain why Murdoch has been very cool to Trump. Now, again, Trump's got a lot of chinks in his armor, or some, anyhow. But they don't want a guy in there that is very upset with the neocons, because the Genie Energy Company, which, of course, is tied in with Hillary Clinton, why she was funneling arms via Benghazi to the ISIS and the people that the Israelis created. Remember, ISIS is Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. That came out in, yes, it really is. It came out in C-SPAN back in the 90s. And some
yes,
good,
that is one of their acronyms.
Exactly. So you have the neocon Hillary Clinton connection there, the Clintonistas and the Bush crime family, basically. But all these other people, like Rupert Murdoch, like James Woolsey, and two former Clinton people, Larry Summers, you might recall him, and Bill Richardson.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they are involved with the Genie Energy Company. What a groundbreaking connecting the dots story by Richard Walker, June 13th, American Free Press. Check it out there at AmericanFreePress.net. But this would answer a lot of reasons why the Romney neocon complex with Rupert Murdoch would be allied against and the Jewish Republican Coalition against Trump. Those are some of the geopolitical reasons. They need to take down Bashar Assad because Syria has rightful claim to the Golan Heights. The UN has said so. But if they can bring down Assad, they would have a case at the UN to somehow finagle control over the Golan Heights. That's what ISIS is all about. That's what they're trying to do over there. I think Richard Walker, who you may, I don't know if he does radio interviews, Mr. Lacavero, but it could be worth bringing him on to make some connections here.
I would love to do that, and I will reach out to him. And I thank you very much for bringing that to my attention.
Well, that was inspired by your conversation tonight. It inspired me to call in with this great dialogue.
Well, I thank you for that. And you know, this is what we really need to start digging into, and I feel somewhat responsible for not digging deep enough into these matters that we've been.
Well, you can't, Mr. Lacavera, you can't do it all, and you got to know the American Free Press, of course, used to be the spotlight, and your guest should know this, or I want him to know this in case he doesn't. The spotlight and Liberty Lobby goes back to Willis Carter, the late Willis Carter, who died just last November. They go back to the mid 1950s. So with all these new websites and upstarts, including, you know, some of us, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And the American Free Press, which, by the way, when they came aboard in the late 70s, John Wayne was one of the original backers and contributors to the spotlight, which, yes, became American Free Press. And that could be why they nixed John Wayne Day last May there. They had a vote on it in California legislature.
Oh, really?
Well, yes, you know,
John Wayne is one of my, actually, I think he's, out of all of those folks down there in Hollywood, I think he's one of my favorites. Him and
Clint Eastwood is a close second, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson, but he's kind of one of my favorites, too. I just can't help but love him for that. I mean, that it was a painfully brutal film, The Passion, but but it necessary, and boy, did he catch some flack on that.
Well, he did. I wish he had a little more courage like his father, Hutton Gibson, who, by the way, was a longtime friend of the American Free Press newspaper. And American Free Press used to have several hosts on RBN at one time, and that's how I found out about RBN, because they ran ads in the American Free Press newspaper.
Wow. That was a little bit before my time, but, you know, I'm looking forward to digging into this, because there's not too much difference between the right and the left when it comes to these things.
Right, right. And when you have the Israeli lobby with so much power, they run the banks, they run the media, that's why they hate Trump. Trump has to be euphemistic right now in referring to the media. He knows, he's from New York, he knows who runs the media. Let's make no mistake about it. And they know him, and that's why the Jewish Republican Coalition and all the left-wing George Soros, left-wing Hungarian-born Jew, this is why they are opposing him en masse. And it's voices like yours and the American Free Press and Tex Mars and these people that are trying to bring this to bear. That's why I'm in the Trump camp.
Well, you know, I hope that you're right about Trump. I've stayed quite neutral up until this point, but, you know, after speaking to, and you know, just because of the nature of the history, it really has nothing to do with Mr. Trump, but more, you know, if you've listened to my show, then you know where our research goes. It's more the actual office and the deviation from the republic form of government that I have a problem with. It's not really any one individual. I haven't gotten behind a U.S. president in some time, because it's been, you know, I haven't seen a U.S. president willing to step up to that podium, probably because he would have his brains, you know, evacuated from his skull for saying the things that I would really like to hear.
Well, one last thing, Tim, you have done great, masterful work with the Bundy, Oregon situation, and I'm forever indebted to you for that.
Thank you.
There's a lot of people, that are Utah-based that had something to do with that directly, and I steered them to your work at Resurrect the Republic. But one last thing.
Thank you for that.
Yes, Tim, but you've got to know that Donald Trump, what other president, like Jim Kelso does say, and I have to hand it to him for that, Kelso keeps talking about how Mr. Trump gets up there and says they're going to rig this election. They tried to in the Republican primary. No other candidate. Ron Paul. Yeah, this didn't come out of their mouths. It's come out of Trump's mouth.
Yeah, Ron Paul didn't even say it, yeah.
That's right. And the other thing Trump has gone forward with is saying that the pulpits need to be freed. Get rid of the 901c3 pulpits. What other candidate has barreled into that, Mr. Trump?
Well, I have to say, for those issues and some more, I have to, you know which way I'm leaning. I try and stay neutral, but it's getting harder and harder to do it.
Well, I want to chime in on that real quick if I could, because I can
hang on a second, and I would love for you to do that. We need to go to our top of the hour break, and then I do want to hear from David Ritter and his thoughts on that subject. We'll be right back, folks. Resurrect the Republic. Truth Radio, broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
I'm not interested in photo ops.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, Talking Pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for software fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin is the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.